hold of Ashwatthama and punish him. So Ashwatthama saw from a great distance that Krishna and Arjuna were pursuing him on a chariot. Arjuna, with dangerous weapons, was pursuing Ashwatthama. So he panicked and he ran for his life. And then after some time, his horses were tired and they were thirsty. And so he knew that very shortly, Arjuna, because he was coming at a great speed, and Arjuna has white horses, we know, as we famous on the cover of the Bhagavad Gita. So this is a picture of Krishna and Arjuna. Does anyone know the names of the horses? So this, I think these horses were donated by Agni, right? I think, yeah. So because Arjuna had helped Agni to devour the Kandava forest, and Indra wanted to prevent that, so Arjuna shot so many arrows in the sky, so Indra could send forth rains, and thus Agni was pleased with Arjuna, and he donated him, from my understanding, the chariot and the horses. So now Arjuna was going at full speed, and Ashwatthama's horses were tired, and he knew that his death was imminent, and so therefore, out of fear, he used the nuclear weapon, or the Brahmastra. And the Brahmastra is a weapon which is unknown in today's day and age. So back in the days of yore, as is mentioned in the purport, the weapons were actually very subtle. So the military science was much more sophisticated than what it is today. So modern society thinks that we are at the pinnacle of material achievements, that civilization has never been so sophisticated before. Civilization has never been so high-tech and so evolved before. So we see with and in a way, technology can be quite fascinating. We see what phones can do. You can have a FaceTime conversation, you can have a video conference with someone just over your handheld device. You can download your email, you can take pictures, you can send them away, you can update your blog, and you can even check your heartbeat just with one device. So the illusion is, people think that we have evolved a lot. And the modern understanding is that that consciousness is not evolved, that in fact matter has evolved. And so we started off from, everything started off by chance, and gradually things have evolved to the extent now things are so sophisticated, everything is so high tech. And 5,000 years ago, people were more or less, their understanding is that people were more or less very, civilization was not very developed. Things were not so sophisticated. And people were very backwards. But when we read the Srimad Bhagavatam, we come across not only spiritual knowledge, which is being presented here. The Bhagavatam is, the main purpose of the Bhagavatam is to present the personality of Godhead Krishna and his glories in relationship to his devotees, and how to develop that relationship with Krishna. But also we get a glimpse into ancient civilizations. So here we are seeing the advancement of ancient civilizations. So here the Brahmastra weapon is being described. So the Brahmastra is a fire weapon. Even today, most weapons are actually fire weapons. They all are based on fire, on the principle of fire. So even if you see a guided missile, it works on the principle of fire or heat. So the missile actually senses a heat source, and then it follows that heat source. And even the missile is also running on the principle of fire, on combustibility, as is mentioned in the purport here. So it's run on fuel, the fuel is ignited, and it goes, it propels forward. So like this, we see that modern weaponry is more or less based, if you look at guns, gun is again principle of fire. But in ancient civilizations, there were, as is also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, that there's not only the fire weapons, but there's even, there's the water weapon, there's the wind weapon. There are weapons of all the elements. We know the five elements, and like that there are five different kinds of weapons based on the elements. But the difference between now and then is that the way weapons were, the technology was that the technology was more subtle before, and now the technology is more gross. So with the advancement of Kali Yuga, things are becoming more and more gross. People's standard of material enjoyment is becoming more and more gross. So before, things were more and more subtle, but now it's the standards of material enjoyment are more and more gross. So before, people would take pleasure in poetry, philosophy, different things which stimulate the mind and the intelligence. But as Kali Yuga is progressing, people are taking have interest in more and more gross kind of pleasures. You know, they want to jump out of the plane, or bungee jumping, or just tasting various things, touching various things, all in relationship with the senses and the sense organs. Sorry?
Scuba diving.
What's another example of a very gross sense pleasure which we come across on a daily basis? Sex life, which is becoming more and more perverted, becoming more and more gross. Sorry? Video games. Yeah, video games. Taking intoxication. You know, it's very, very becoming more and more gross. So we see in this way people's standards of enjoyment are actually gradually dropping. So the advancement is considered to go more and more subtle, and ultimately to even transcend the subtle and transcend the three modes of material nature. So the weapons before were actually very subtle. They could be invoked by the potency of sound. So as we see, Ashwatthama, he, as is mentioned in the previous verses, he touched the sanctified water and he recited certain hymns, certain mantras he recited. So just by the potency of those mantras, he was able to release the Brahmastra weapon. And the Brahmastra is like one of the most powerful weapons to have in your armory. So the difference between now and then is that now we see even like you need so much space to store the weapons, and that area has to be heavily guarded. And then there is an industry required to manufacture the weapons, and there's so much research going on to manufacture those weapons. And then the effect of those weapons is also very gross. You see, it leads a lot of gross destruction. So here the Brahmastra, you don't need a place to store it. You know, it doesn't have to be manufactured. You just need to know the science of reciting the mantras. So this is actually advancement of civilization. So if you read the Mahabharata, we'll come across instances where the warriors are firing. Of course, not only do they have the arrows and the clubs and all that, but when they fire the arrows, they chant certain mantras, and then the arrows act in certain ways. And even the arrows could be guided to a particular target. So with modern warfare, now they have even achieved this in a gross sense, that they have guided missiles. So they have a localized target, but when they hit the target, it leads to destruction in the vicinity of that target. Whereas with the Brahmastra, It can be directed to an individual, and it will only destroy that individual. So such a kind of science is practically unknown today. And if such kind of a science is presented, people will say this is a mythology. So when they hear the Mahabharata or they read the Srimad Bhagavatam, because modern science cannot achieve this kind of advancement, they'll say that this is a myth. This is nice imaginary stories. Even we read the pastime of when Shalva attacked Dwarkapuri. Shalva was gifted an airship by Lord Shiva, and that airship it could actually move at the speed of the mind, and it was as big as a city. So can you imagine an airship as big as the city? So, and it was moving so fast that they didn't know where it was. So such was the advancement of science back then. Even we see Kardama Muni, that he actually created an entire palace, and he was enjoying in that just by his mystic potencies. So back then the advancement and these kind of the people were actually the yogis, and such kind of people were very, very simple, and the yogis contained great powers. But as is mentioned in the purport, that such a kind of a science is not spiritual, but it is only material. So we know the yogis have 8 major kinds of siddhis, and they are again subtypes of siddhis, the secondary siddhis or the mystic potencies. So those 8 kind of siddhis, they are not spiritual, it's only a material science. But as is mentioned in the purport, the subtle science of chanting hymns is also material, but it has yet to be known by the modern material scientists. Subtle material science is not spiritual, but it has a direct relationship with the spiritual method. So there is something in common with the spiritual method, that the spiritual method is also invoked by the potency of sound. So we see sound is actually very, very powerful. We see with the modern scientific approach, that is also more or less based on sound, in the sense of students go to classes, they listen, and then they are able to cultivate that science. But the yogic science is a bit more advanced. So again, they use sound and the yogic principles to cultivate such kind of powers. But in spiritual life, we see again that is also based on sound. So the first process of the 9 items of devotional service, the first is shravanam. Shravanam means to hear. So again, we hear spiritual sound vibration, which actually revives our dormant Krishna consciousness. So then the second one is shravanam kirtanam. So we glorify. So the second is, again we use sound to establish our relationship with Krishna. So the first process is to hear, understand the science of Krishna, then the second is to apply it. So by Shravanam Kirtanam, so that's what we do in the morning, or during the day, we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So the Maha Mantra is a sound vibration, and it's a very powerful sound vibration. So when we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we are actually coming in contact with the Supreme Lord.
He's dancing on our tongue.
So when we are chanting with great attention and devotion, their lordships are actually present. So we see again, by the potency of sound, one can advance in material technology, and by the potency of sound, we can advance ourselves in spiritual technology. So as it's mentioned here, Ashwatthama, he knew how to release the Brahmastra weapon, but he didn't know how to retract it. So if the Brahmastra weapon, the way the Brahmastra weapon works is, it is a localized weapon. Even we see Ashwatthama release the weapon, the Brahmastra, on Maharaj Parikshit when he was in the womb of Uttara. So that was very, very localized. It could go right in the womb. There's no weapon like that, we know, which can attack in the womb. So it will add, the modern weapon will destroy the person and many people around them. But the Ashwatthama fired the weapon at Maharaj Parikshit. But in this case, we see he doesn't know how to retract it. And if it is not retracted, then it can cause wide-scale devastation. So in order to prevent that, as Krishna asked Arjuna to also use his Brahmastra weapon to counteract Ashwatthama's Brahmastra. So even between the fight between Lord Shiva and I think Krishna, they use different kinds of weapons. They would use, if one would use the fire weapon, the other would use the water weapon to counteract it. So in this way, weapons can be counteracted. There's a whole science behind it. So Krishna advised Arjuna to use his Brahmastra weapon to counteract his. But because Ashwatthama used it, he didn't use it on religious principles. Weapons have to be used, everything has to be used in relationship to the ultimate purpose of life. So, generally the Kshatriyas are meant to, Kshatriya means one who protects. So the prime duty of the Kshatriya is to offer protection to their dependents. So they use different kinds of means to offer that protection. One is they can, if there's an enemy, they can, you know, speak in kind words and try to resolve the situation. If that doesn't work, then they can use diplomacy. If that doesn't work, you know, there's that, this danda, then before that, what's that verse? Sama dana bheda danda. So they can use kind words, they can use money, they can use some charity. Sorry? Yeah, they can divide. And they can use diplomacy. If nothing works, then they use force. So Kshatriya doesn't mean you just use weapons straight away. There's the main duty of the Kshatriya is to offer protection, and they can use various means to offer that kind of protection. So sometimes they have to use force or violence as a means to offer that protection. So here we see Ashwatthama, he released the Brahmastra weapon just to protect himself. So generally before, warfare was engaged in for religious purposes. So the duty of a Kshatriya is to elevate the consciousness of their dependents, to make them Krishna conscious. And for that purpose they can, they'll use any means to achieve that purpose. So sometimes even force has to be used. When there are opposing elements, then force has to be used in order to achieve that purpose. So when the kings were saintly, or the Rajarshis, the Krishna conscious kings, they would not conquer over territory for their own personal gain. But they would conquer over other kings to establish Krishna consciousness. Or if someone is attacking them, to just try to lord it over, then they would defend themselves to protect the dependents from falling prey to lust eventually. So here we see Ashwatthama, he's using the Brahmastra weapon just to protect himself and to cause wide scale devastation. So that is an irreligious principle. So as it's mentioned here that the practice was not only proper but also irreligious. So Ashwatthama's practice was not proper in the sense he fired the weapon and he didn't know how to retract it, and it was irreligious because it had nothing to do with any spiritual advancement. It is only for his own protection. And we see that kind of mentality is very prominent in today's society. If someone is in danger, if their life is in danger, or they are in a kind of a difficult circumstance, then they'll use any kinds of means or justification to protect themselves, and then they don't care about others. So we see even the nuclear weapon, the governments are saying it is only as a deterrent, but we won't use it. So many countries are possessing nuclear weapons as a deterrent. So in other words, other countries don't attack them. But we know if any country is endangered, they're going to use the nuclear weapons. And Prabhupada said they are manufacturing so many nuclear weapons, and one day they'll just use it on each other. Because people who are demoniac, they have no control over their senses. So the leaders who are very demoniac, they are very greedy and full of lust. And when it comes to protecting their own skin, they will just use these weapons without considering the consequences of the use of such weapons. And even we see this even not long ago, but with the World War II. How did the World War II end? America used the atomic weapons. They threw them on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So we can see that these such kind of weapons are manufactured, and one day they'll use them to justify their own purposes. So we can see, like, America used these weapons without thinking of the huge implications or the consequences of it. And we've seen how many thousands and thousands and hundreds and thousands of people lives were permanently changed, or so many thousands of people died, and so many got disabled for the rest of their lives and even their generations after that. So even, you know, the point is that in order to use these weapons, one has to be Krishna conscious. So one should know the purpose behind using these weapons, or the utility behind it. So with modern warfare, they use more or less for the purpose of sense gratification, or for the purpose of protecting the sense gratification of their dependents. So are there any questions or comments? Prabhupada ki.